police respite centre that we've set up at the Welcome Centre. You can probably hear through the windows a bit of chitter chatter as police enjoy a hot meal and a cup of tea and coffee. I think we've got ice cream and jelly tonight.
Wow, fabulous.
Quite impressive. Well, I've just managed to grab one of the officers and I'm going to get you to introduce yourself. I'm not down with all the police lingo on all the different ranks of policemen and policewomen, so maybe you could talk me through that as well.
Yeah, my name's Mark Donnelly. I'm a constable attached to the response team, Team C in Waltham Forest Metropolitan Police.
Okay, so there are we've seen all sorts of different teams. I mean, we've had the Norfolk team, we've had the Safer Transport team, I think we've had the Robbery Something Unit. What? How many of these different teams are there?
We've got, there are various operational units across all boroughs, very variety of uniform officers who are out on patrol. You've got Robbery Squad, as you said, Safer Neighbourhoods, Safer Transport teams, and everybody's being utilised at the moment. So people who would normally be in an office or normally be in on a plainclothes unit, a Robbery Squad unit, are now in uniform. So they've been asked to dust down their uniforms, which they haven't been wearing for a couple of years. And it's quite funny actually seeing colleagues in uniform. I haven't seen them in uniform for a while. Some of the uniforms look a bit tighter now. but yeah, everybody's pulled together just to put a massive presence on the streets. As a visible deterrent, really, and just to let people know that if they are going to be up to no good, there will be officers literally around the corner to deal with it, whatever it is.
So I've been speaking to some of the officers who have done, you know, some very long shifts, and it sounds like all the days off have been cancelled. Can you just give me an idea of what your working week's been like this week?
I think last weekend was probably the toughest weekend. As I said to you earlier, I was on an operation uptown and had been on been dealing with that for about 10 hours and was just due to come home when we'd been called over to Tottenham, because then that's when it just started. So my serial, which is the bus that we're on, my serial and three others then went to Tottenham, and we stayed there for a third of 12 hours.
So you were there when it was really, you know, at its peak,
when
I
it
guess.
Was at its peak, yeah. But
scary?
Scary. Well, we were just tasked with on the boundary of it, the level two officers, which were the ones dressed up in with shields and so on, and the protective equipment. They're the ones who were in the middle of it and dealing with that. So we were sort of based around the outside, dealing with people coming in, going out, trying to stop people going in to make it worse, and again just providing a visible deterrent and high visible presence, really.
And how big of an area was it that you were trying to sort of contain?
It started, as we all know now, at Tottenham Police Station. The difficulty we had was that it was very fluid. The command team had tasked units to the centre of the disturbance to try and contain it, and that was probably within a half mile perimeter, but that was very fluid. As I said, every time officers appeared and moved forward, it just pushed them to another location where they would cause more damage, which we tried to contain, and then they would move to another area. It's a very difficult situation to deal with. As I said, it's very fluid, and the difference is they have the advantage. They've got the upper hand because they know what they're going to do next. A lot of our policing at the time was containment and reaction. And that's why, you know, I understand when the public see what's going on and they're frustrated that officers can't go in, snatch them and pull them out. But ultimately, the officers that are on the front line that appear to be standing doing nothing, taking orders from other people higher up the chain.
And are those other people on the scene as well with you? Are they seeing what's going on?
Generally, the people that are in command are based at the control centre, which is not where the incident was happening. But they've got a very difficult job in themselves, because they're getting intel back from the ground. They're having to take the time to make the right decisions, and obviously to do that, you have to spend a bit of time deliberating on potentially what could happen, what would be a consequence of your actions. So everybody who was involved in that, from the officers down on the ground waiting for the orders to the people up top who were giving the commands, it was a very, very difficult position to be in. And whilst I was down on the ground, I wouldn't relish being in the commander's position. It's a very difficult job, very, very difficult job. And it's very easy to criticise any decisions that were made or commands given. I challenge anyone to go in and be able to do that role easily because it was tough.
But I mean, there's got to be a point. I mean, if you know, the decisions from on high are going to take a bit of thinking about and make sure that they're done correctly. But I guess there must be some instances where something flares up very quickly. Do you have then the power to act and do something about that? If it's right in front of you, something's happening right now, or is there a kind of a sort of level where, you know, if you feel somebody's safety's at risk, or, you know, is there kind of a threshold but when you can do something?
Ultimately, as a police officer, you're trained in your early days to make what's called a dynamic risk assessment of every situation you go into, wherever it is. Okay, as an individual police officer, you have to decide what action you're going to take, what impact that's going to have on the people you're dealing with, but ultimately as well, and probably more importantly, your colleagues. Now, if you're not all reading from the same script and you're standing in a line and I see something 50 yards away and I take it upon myself to go in there and endanger myself, ultimately I'm endangering the 49 other officers with me because I'm now putting them in a difficult position where they have to decide, do I rescue my colleague? Mm-hmm. So, and that's why we have a command structure, and that's why the commands on incidents like this, which were, you know, unparalleled in London's history as far as I'm aware, apart from the poll tax riots, which were on a par with that, we have a command structure which works. And it, as I said before, it's easy to criticise it, but it does work. It may not appear that way sometimes to the public. I'm surprised there wasn't as many casualties as there were, and there must be some element of of satisfaction that the Met get from that. We contained. Okay, it wasn't great, and I'm sure many officers on the front line were as frustrated as the public. Many officers were chomping at the bit to get in there and grab people. We know the difference between right and wrong, and most people in this country do. And for officers to stand there and witness that without being able to do it, take any action, must have been very frustrating. But yeah, we have a command structure, we stick to that, and I'm happy to work within that command.
So I have to say, having been down at this little respite centre we put together this week, it's given me a different insight into the way the police work and just who the police are, actually. Because, you know, very often, you know, we, the media will say, you know, the police are corrupt or the police have racist elements or there's, you know, they've acted too harshly in a situation. And I kind of think of them as the police, not as you as a person standing in front of me. And I think quite a lot of people, you know, the only times they talk to police officers is, you know, they've just been burgled, they've just been mugged, something terrible's happened, and I can see why they might be frustrated. So is there anything you can say to people who might wonder, I mean, you've sort of covered it because of the command structure, but can you put people's minds at rest about whether these people are going to be brought to justice? I mean, if you've been there and you've seen somebody breaking the law, and then you're in a line and you can't do anything, what happens? Do those people get away scot-free, or are you... Have you got things in place to actually follow them up, trace them, and actually bring them to justice?
Well, as we know now, at this moment in time, I believe there's the Met alone have arrested over 1,500 people. That's just the Met. And obviously this has spread to other major cities. Those 1,500 we didn't arrest at the time. So clearly there is something in place to identify these people. And, you know, we urge the public to get in touch with the Met and shop these people. If they know who they are, do the right thing. It basically comes down to the difference between right and wrong. And if you don't know that difference, then there's something wrong in the world. I'm sure there will be more arrests in the near future, and I'm surprised actually the way the court system is kicked into gear. 24-hour courts overnight working into the weekends. It's been tough for everyone involved on this side. But I think we need to make a stand for history, really, in the future, to say when we look back at this in 5-10 years' time, how the system did work and it come together, despite all the criticism it's had in the past. And ironically, I think it's taken a major event like this to make people realise just what a great system we have. We knock the judicial system all the time. People don't get the sentences they should get, in theory. And I think magistrates now, and everyone across the board, but magistrates in particular, have come out and appear to have been taking a stronger stance on it, which is, you know, promising from our point of view.
And just one last question, more of a personal question, really. Just because I'm trying to show that the police are actually people, I'd just like to know, what was it that made you want to join the force? You know, and you know, Have you ever sort of looked back and regretted that decision, or are you still proud to be part of it?
I'm 47. I've been in the job nearly 3 years. So I had a profession before this. I was office-based. My wife is a police officer as well. And we have two little children. We've got a four-and-a-half-year-old daughter and a two-and-a-half-year-old boy. So even when I've done a 27-hour shift, I'll go home to a tougher job, I think, sometimes. Being a parent is as hard, if not harder. And I think getting back to what, you know, this incident, the press has touched on and the government have touched on the effects of bad parenting or lack of it. I like to get home in one piece. That's my priority because I've got a family at home. But I joined the job because of the excitement. As I say, I was office-based for 20 years. And I looked out the window one day and said, I don't want to do this anymore. What can I do? And my wife said, well, the job's quite good. Give that a try. So, yeah, here I am.
Well, you certainly had your fair share of excitement this week. Enough for a lifetime, I imagine.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks ever so much for stopping to talk to me. And I'll let you get back in and have another cup of tea.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.